What is the best measure of the economy? Is it the GDP number from the government, which told us the U.S. economy grew 2.6% in the fourth quarter of last year? Is it the unemployment rate, 3.8% at last check? Is it the stock market, which is once again near record highs? Or is it something else? Well, our next guest thinks it should be what he calls economic dignity. Gene Sperling was the director of the National Economic Council under Presidents Clinton and Obama. He joins us from Washington. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So how do you define economic dignity, first of all?
You know, when you're looking at your end goal for economic policy, it shouldn't be some arcane metric. You really should be asking as a policymaker, what on someone's deathbed would they say mattered most in their economic life? And so I define this sense of economic dignity as having three pillars. One, through your contribution, were you able to not only care for your family, but were you able to experience the most natural and equal and wonderful joys of family, or were you denied them by economic deprivation? Mm-hmm. So that's the first pillar. The second is an ability to pursue your potential and purpose is fundamental to that sense of economic dignity. And third, could you contribute in the economy at work with respect as opposed to domination or humiliation? You know, if you look at the Me Too movement, what you saw were a lot of particularly women who were either pursuing their ability to care for their family or even, you know, high potential in the entertainment field. Mm-hmm. But the price of that was a sense of humiliation, domination, powerlessness that's not captured in any economic metric, but matters deeply to a person's life. And so my view is, that's what we should be focusing on.
So you talk about asking these questions on a deathbed. How do you measure it along the way, though? Because wouldn't anyone going through life have to go through ups and downs? And at a certain point, they may have a job that they don't like and feel that they don't have economic dignity, but maybe it's a stepping stone to a point where they will.
Well, one of the things I say is that government and even the best economic policy cannot guarantee happiness, and we will all go through disappointments. But I talk about a sense of basic economic dignity. So in terms of care for family, I mean, those are policy issues. If you're somebody in our country who works full time, can you not only raise your family with a degree of security, but are you able to actually be there for the sick relative or the sick child? Whether health care is a right, what our minimum wage is, you know, those things matter very deeply. Secondly, when I talk about pursuit of potential, a lot of what I talk about there is the need for second chances. So that assumes that there will be times you'll lose jobs, you'll face dislocation. But we are a country who supports the value that the accident of your birth shouldn't affect the outcome of your life. But when it comes to policy, we actually don't come through. We're probably one of the worst countries in the world in actually helping people if they suffer major job loss or career loss or have a spell in the prison system. When we don't give people second chances, it's bad for economic growth. We lose their potential, but we also hurt something deeper in people. And I think when you look at the number of deaths of despair, addiction, suicide, a lot of that is not just about your wage or whether you could get a job, but whether you still have the capacity and opportunity to feel a sense of potential and purpose. And when you look at the movements that led in the progressive era, it wasn't always about just did you have a job or what your wage was. It was whether you were treated in an arbitrary way, where you did you feel abused. You may not have the job you love. It may not pay as much as you'd like. It may not be everything. But you should have an economy and policies that give workers the power to stand up for themselves, even with the ups and downs and disappointments of life.
So what do you make of the fact that in 2016, a lot of people in this country who felt that they had been let down in the economy, that maybe they didn't have the dignity that they wanted, ended up going not to the people that you worked for, the Democrats, but to President Trump, that he gave them the message that they wanted to hear?
Well, the way I would look at that is that when we fail to have a true compact on economic dignity, it opens the door for somebody like a Donald Trump to then appeal to that sense of being left behind, not with positive or unifying policy measures, but it leaves an opening to play on resentment and fear and division. Certainly, there were a lot of people who felt that way. But the problems with economic dignity are much deeper. And I think when I look at like domestic workers or people in care jobs, those are often women of color. They're often women who speak a second language. And you don't think about them as being connected with perhaps the dislocated steel worker. But there is something in common. There is a loss of economic dignity when they're in work situations where either they're feeling abused or they're feeling that their country is not committing enough to giving them true second chances. So the best thing we can do is respond to that with the right type of policies and opportunities, as opposed to leaving a vacuum that can be filled with the type of things that divide us. And it's upon all of us to provide a better alternative.
Okay, so let me go through some of the alternatives that are coming out right now, some of the proposals that Democrats are looking at to help lift people up in this economy and maybe give them that economic dignity that you're talking about. What do you think about the idea of Medicare for all?
So what I stress is that your focus is on what is the end impact on people. So what I think is just wonderful about those who call for Medicare for all is that they're fundamentally focusing on an end goal, that healthcare should be a right, that it should be available, that we shouldn't see a parent with the deep pain of not being able to provide for a child with a serious illness or worrying they would bankrupt their family. In my view, you focus on that end goal, and Medicare for all can be one way to get there, but we're not open to people accepting, for example, the status quo, where so many millions of people's economic dignity is threatened on a daily basis by lack of health security.
What about universal basic income, the idea that everybody would have, from the government, at least a bare minimum of income?
Well, that is an issue in my article where I do offer a different vision. And what I argue is that we should not give up on this sense of a compact of contribution. It's not that we should only help people based on whether they have a job, but I do think it is deep in our country to ask everybody to carry their load, to do their share. And so I see more, let's have a strong dignity wage. If you work, there should be a high minimum wage, $15. There should be childcare. There should be a broader earned income tax credit. We should help out and maybe have basic income for the poorest families or those with disabilities. Instead of writing everybody just a check, give more people funds and support to have the skills to do a job that gives dignity to others. There are families across our country who need somebody with skills who can help their parent or grandparent with dementia, who can help their child with autism. So rather than just give people a check, I would have a double dignity jobs corps where we're supporting people contributing to another person's economic dignity. And that was the beauty of how Martin Luther King talked about this, that all jobs have dignity because they allow you to serve your fellow person.
I just want to finally ask you, if you were to take your proposal and drop it off at the, you know, Republican congressional lunch, I would imagine that many people would say, oh, here we go again. The liberals just want to spend more money and not, you know, stick with our capitalist system where everybody just has to work for what they get. Well, how do you respond to that argument?
Well, again, the vision I have is not just handing out checks. It is fundamentally based around work. So I think if I started perhaps talking to some conservatives, and I said, don't you believe that if a person works hard and does everything they could, that they should be able to raise their children, retire, and take care of their parents with a sense of dignity? I think people would say yes. When you talked about the end goal, I think you unify people more, and maybe we can unify on end goals of economic dignity, and that will open up more room for people to have a good faith debate about the best means to get there.
That is Gene Sperling, who was director of the National Economic Council under Presidents Clinton and Obama. We will link you to his article about economic dignity at hereandnow.org. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.